Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This podcast is brought to you by Microsoft Teams. When there's more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team.
Look at it. Look at it.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
He's going to take it the length of the court, puts it up with a left hand. Who beats James Harden?
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
So what do you make of all this, Richard, with Harden?
Sometimes players do this to show people this is what you're going to get if you're going to keep me someplace that I don't want to be.
Today's guests, NFL Network analyst Brian Baldinger, ESPN announcer Chris Fowler, six-time Pro Bowl receiver Chad Ochocinco Johnson, plus actor Scott Glenn. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
All right, everybody, welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. I am tangled up in plum today. It is a sweater that I'm very proud of, so come at me. Come at me. We're here on Peacock, NBC Sports on Peacock, which is where you could see this splendiferous plum sweater given to me by my mother-in-law for Hanukkah. So everybody just back off.
Okay. Right. I was going to be like very brand new or an older sweater.
I send hellos to everybody out there. Just call me the professor today. we say hello, everybody, today here on this this Friday on the back nine of December of 2020 that we hope to never see again. Good to see you, Chris Brockman.
Hey, buddy.
Over there?
What's
good
happening,
to see you,
man?
Sir. Good to see you. Mike Del Tufo. Good to see you in your chair and settling into his seat, the social media grandmaester of the Rich Eisen Show, TJ Jefferson.
What it do, baby?
Good to see all you
do,
gents.
Baby?
Good to see all you gents here.
Plum, huh?
It is. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You look good, Rich.
I appreciate that. At least, you know, I'm not sitting here with a Rich Eisen podcast shirt on. You know, I know this is the Rich Eisen Show.
Okay.
Somebody forgot to tell John Gruden it's no longer a podcast, it's a show.
Nice. Maybe he was just nostalgic.
Oakland Raiders hat.
Look, it's perfect.
It's tough enough
it's
for
perfect.
Us. It's tough you know? Enough for us. We had, I think, was somebody came on this show this week and called the Chargers San Diego. I mean, it's still tough for us all to get out of it.
Yeah, it's tough.
And so it doesn't help us in the media to look up and see Gruden wearing an Oakland Raiders hat.
I didn't even notice.
Oh, man.
Definitely
did. I didn't notice till they pointed it out.
So somebody's like, hey, coach, take off. Cause who is the person that's got to go up to Gruden in the middle of a game? Coach, we need your hat. Why? It says Oakland on it. Oh, geez. Okay.
One of the ball boys, I'm
it
sure.
It was all broken in, though. It looked like it fit great.
I'll tell you. And then he comes back with a Las Vegas Raiders hat on.
The brim's not worth it.
And not nearly the most talked about swap last night. The Raiders were forced to endeavor. Derek Carr leaves the game with something. As Joe Buck expertly said, this is why he has all the Emmys and all. Don't need to tell you that what's going on right there, pretty much. You know, he blew the old groin tire going into the end zone. And you text me, you're like, well, that's all, folks, for the Raiders.
The Raiders.
And I'm like, I don't, you know, I did want to make sure because the entire Twitterverse just loves the fact, like, everybody needs to have someone in your life to love you the same way that John Gruden loves Nate Peterman. And so everyone assumed here comes Nate Peterman, but no. They got Marcus Mariota. And, you know, with all the attention on Justin Herbert, and rightfully so, going into last night, because he's a dynamite player who we were wondering is going to be, if he's hitting the rookie wall. I mean, that's one of the things that I mentioned with Rich Gannon yesterday is this is, you know, he comes in week 12. This is now week 15. You throw in a bye week. It's around the number of starts that he would have had for a full season before he's off for his bowl game when he was at Oregon. And maybe he's hitting the old wall because the Patriots took care of business against him 45-0. And now, you know, the Chargers taking on the Vegas Raiders last night after they bounced back with a win at home against the old Atlanta Falcons. And we'll see what happens. And he showed up dynamite last night. My God, is he just so good.
He's great.
He's so very good. And Keenan Allen was half of it. He was a Keenan. Yeah, he was a key. He was like a quarter of a Keenan Allen.
Exactly.
And Mike Williams made one catch and disappeared. And there was a bunch of guys that needed name tags for all of us to know. And he's finding them all. And he is just dynamite, man. He's making throws. And he's one tough hombre. But this is 2020, and you can never expect, the expected most of the time. And who would have thought that this would be an Oregon Duck quarterback festival? That's what it turned into last night. The two most decorated Oregon Duck quarterbacks of the last, what would you say, quarter century, Chris? Right?
Yeah, easily.
Here they go. Mariota, and he looked tremendous. And one of his first throw, I think, was on the run to find, Foster Moreau, tiptoeing the sideline about 20 yards down the field, a perfect throw that only he could collect. And sure enough, in a back-and-forth game, here's Marcus Mariota marching down the field with 4 minutes to go, 3 minutes to go, right before two-minute warning, Joe Buck's going into what we're all thinking at home. And this is what you do as a broadcaster. You set the table. You talk about journeys traveled that is just about to culminate in a victory that nobody saw coming because nobody thought he'd be in the game. And Marcus Mariota talking about how he got to the Raiders. And I mean, for a guy who literally had not taken a significant series of snaps all year long. Like you could say last night's series of snaps was the most significant series of snaps he had in the game before he was benched for Ryan Tannehill last year. And he had the spidey sense going. He knew where people were right behind his helmet, and he's getting rid of the ball, and he's making slide steps, and he's running with it, and he's throwing with it. And you know, Joe's setting the stage for it, and he throws one right behind Zay Jones right in the hands of Rich Eisen show favorite, Chris Harris, who goes the other direction, 50 more yards. And, you know, now suddenly the Chargers have the game-winning kick on their side. The problem with that is they're the Chargers, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's on the hat, San Diego or Los Angeles. They're still the Chargers there, and nothing's more consistent. Nothing's more expected in the year that I mentioned is the time to rarely expect the expected. Nothing's more like lock stamped right there for you as the expected, quite like the stepping on their own Johnson special teams of the San Diego / Los Angeles Chargers. I mean, literally. It right on cue, missing his second field goal of the game, Michael Badgley coming on out. And so this opportunity, golden opportunity presented to the Los Angeles Chargers with enough time on the clock for the Raiders to march down the field. And instead of throwing a Hail Mary, going for a 65-yard field goal that hardly ever got off the ground, because of a botched snap and all of that, and just jumping on a loose ball to end regulation. Honestly, the worst finishing act I've ever seen in Las Vegas since Florence Henderson came out for one more song to close up for George Burns at Caesar's Palace when my brother and I and my sister-in-law all watched that unfold in front of us. I told you that story before. She came out, she opened for George and thanked the good people of Wesson Oil for making this night possible, banged out, put on a happy face, a few more songs. Out came George Burns, who was, in fact, 100 years old at the time, who sat in a chair, told a few jokes into a microphone that was just on a stand, did that for about 30 minutes, then left. Florence Henderson came out. That's what I was reminded of, the way the game ended last night in regulation.
Wait, she's the Brady Bunch, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, she could sing a tune. You worked with Florence Henderson?
Yes, at the Tonight Show.
Very rarely will I pause in the middle of my open that is football related, but I have to hit the pause. But what are you talking about?
Wells, what's her name? From Gilligan's Island.
Dawn
Florence,
Wells.
Dawn Wells. Florence Henderson. What's his name from the little short kid guy from we did a thing that called guy. Survivor Island.
Okay.
Fantasy Island.
No, not her, Valeches. I can't think of his name.
All good. So for the Tonight Show?
We did this thing for the Tonight
with
Show.
Jay Leno?
Florence yes. Okay. And Florence Henderson was on it.
Wonderful.
What a pleasant woman.
This.
I just wanted to let you know that.
Two pleasants.
6 degrees of separation, Rich.
Almost. That converts that explanation.
Wow.
Almost filled with as many pratfalls as the end of last night's regulation.
Webster. Thank you. Webster. Was on it. Yes.
Emmanuel Lewis.
Emmanuel Lewis.
Thank you,
everybody.
Emmanuel Lewis. Thank you. I couldn't think of it.
Amazing.
It sounds like a bad joke. Florence Henderson, Dawn Wells, and Emmanuel Lewis walk into the Tonight Show, and Mike Del Tufo just filling. That doesn't need a punchline. That's just like, you know, a priest, a rabbi, and whatever.
Hey, now.
All right.
Hey.
But, you know, overtime hits. Yep. The Raiders, hey, man, that offense was beginning to churn it out last night. As a matter of fact, they had the longest drive in 13 years in a day, and I pointed out on Twitter that the single possession, time of possession drought for the Raiders had just been bar mitzvahed. And they were beginning to, they got the ball, and I mean.
They look great, but score a touchdown, yeah, end the game.
I guess you can't blame Gruden for on fourth down kicking it, because you've left only because at one point they even said, God bless it. They even said, was it Aikman who said, as the time was ticking down when they got inside, when the Raiders got inside the 5-yard line and the two timeouts remaining for the Chargers, they're like, they're going to call a timeout here, right? You call a timeout here, right? That's what Aikman says. Right. And they cut to Anthony Lynn, who's looking up at the clock and then finally going, yeah, timeout. Like, it's as if somebody got in his ear, like Troy Aikman says, you should take the timeout. Okay. I got it.
Yeah.
Which is unfair to Anthony Lynn, but, I mean, the clock the inside the 10-yard line play calls on offense and then the clock management in the last 2 minutes have just been a brutal watch for the Chargers all season long, which is why they're 5-9, you know. But, you know, you can't blame Gruden. You got to put the 3 on the board, because if at least with the 3 on the board, you've got a chance to win, because you don't think you're going to get the ball back. So if you don't score any points right there, that means the best you're going to do is a tie or lose. And a tie, it would have hobbled the Raiders almost as badly as the loss they eventually got.
So just go for the win. It's 4th and 6.
I know, but if you don't get it, what
then
happens?
Then they have the ball at the 1-yard line.
And you call your timeouts, you get it back, you kick 3.
Yeah, you blitz like crazy and try to get a safety.
Or you just play defense. And then you get the ball back with good field position, and Daniel Carlson wins it anyway.
Yeah, I don't understand kicking it. It's just,
well, I mean, and inevitably, you know, here goes. I assume that's what Gruden's mindset was, and here comes Justin Herbert, 53-yard pass downfield.
But you saw how great he'd been playing. I don't know why you want to give him the ball back with the chance to win the game.
And I even tweeted out towards the end of regulation that this is winding up to be the most Chargers finish ever, and it damn near almost was. You remember last year they lost in Tennessee because a couple of touchdowns that were ruled touchdowns were, after further review, ruled down at the 1/2-yard line anyway, and then Melvin Gordon fumbled it and they lost in Tennessee.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yep.
What if in overtime the Justin Herbert sneak that wound up being fumbled into the end zone, but pulled back into the field of play because in the last 2 minutes, you cannot recover somebody else's fumble.
Yeah, that's only, only the person who fumbled can recover.
That's the old holy roller play. The NFL ruled that that famed holy roller play never to be seen again. What if the Raiders had recovered that? That would have ended the game, because
over.
The Raiders got the 3 points.
Yeah, game over.
So close to being literally the worst Chargers finish I've ever seen, and that's saying a lot. But we do come out of this thinking about how terrific Justin Herbert is, and we do come out of this officially, in my mind, I know there's still time left, fork-sticking a team that I thought was going to make the playoffs all year long. I thought the Raiders were a playoff team all year long. I thought that this team had the guys up front and the horse and Josh Jacobs and the quarterback that was not making mistakes and the wide receivers that could provide enough downfield presence. Third and Renfro, you got somebody who could move the sticks. You had Max Crosby who could rush the passer. You had Jonathan Abram who could thump from the back end. I thought you had a playoff team. And when they were 6-3, I firmly believed it. Did not see a 1-4 stretch from 6-3 coming. Could have easily be, they could easily be right now instead of 7-7 after a 1-4 stretch. They could easily be 6-8. They could easily lost 5 in a row if not for the Hail Mary in New York.
What happened?
Well, what happened was a lot of injuries. Trent Brown went out. And then inexplicably, Carr started making mistakes. That game in Atlanta was a canary in the coal mine. The Jets was another one. And then, you know, you're losing close games like last night. I thought Mariota was going to be the hero of the night and an attaboy for Justin Herbert. Instead, Herbert is like now the guy that Bradshaw said on the postgame show last night, an Elway type
Marino.
Guy. Marino. He's that good. Chargers found their guy.
Found their guy.
And just how good is he? Well, Brian Baldinger is going to put his finger on it.
Come on, Rich.
Hey,
jeez.
What?
Nothing.
He does his breakdowns.
I mean,
so popular. Love Baldy, man. He's coming up in 4.5 minutes. I don't understand.
I mean,
Chris Fowler will join us at the top of hour number two. Chris Fowler will join us top of hour number two. He's calling Clemson Notre Dame on ABC. By the way, you can hear Clemson Notre Dame right here on Rich Eisen Show affiliate, the Mightier 1090 in Southern California.
What time's that game, Mike?
4 p.m. Eastern,
attaboy,
people.
Come on.
Great job. Great job.
I mean, what is this?
Chris Fowler's calling it, and he's excited to call it for a couple of reasons. One, it's the game of the week, if not the year, right? Correct?
Correct.
Very good.
Nah.
So much on the line here.
So much on
Clemson
the line.
Does Clemson need to win to make it?
Probably.
Does Notre Dame need to win to make it? What about the teams on the outside looking in? Okay.
Notre Dame should be
earlier in the day. The Ohio State's taking on Northwestern. Does Ohio State win and get in? Regardless of what happens between Clemson and Notre Dame, that's the stakes that we're going to have at stake right there. Okay. As Alabama takes on Florida, A&M is going to boat race Tennessee. Yep. So then we're going to sit back. And tonight you got USC trying to raise its hand like Ohio State and say, yeah, I know we're 6-0, but that's an O next door name. And I know what you guys, everybody sit here and thinks about Pac-12 football, but, you know, what do you say we fight on? So those are the stakes of college football this weekend. Another reason why Chris Fowler's excited to call this game. Would you care to guess the margin of victory of the games that Chris Fowler and Kirk Herbstreit have called this year?
Average margin?
Average margin of victory.
3 touchdowns.
26 points per game.
Oh, baby. Ooh. Oh, gosh.
It's gotten so bad, Chris Fowler's cat is even upset about it. There he is. That's Stanley right there. Post-game dinner. Really? Another one. Will you ever call a close game again? His cat's wondering of Daddy.
Fowler.
Well, Jennifer is really the one who rules that household. They produce a podcast together. Fowler's going to be talking about his podcast as well as Clemson Notre Dame. That's coming up. Also, I'll set the stage here for a very important interview.
Do it.
Very important interview. And you have to stay tuned for this. Like, literally, you cannot leave your radio. You cannot leave Peacock because we're going to have a dynamite hour between now and then. But I don't believe I have interviewed him since this day. Since the day at the 2009 Pro Bowl in South Florida. It was when they moved it from Hawaii to the mainland United States for the first of a handful of times. This was the year in which Breeze and the Saints made the Super Bowl against the Colts. Peyton Manning, right? And this is a huge Super Bowl, and those remarkable players were not part of the Pro Bowl because of it, but showed up and waved and all that stuff. Anyway, it was a practice at St. Thomas Aquinas High School in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Reason why I remember all of this is because it's the alma mater of Michael Irvin, who was there, and literally it was like Elvis entering the building every time he walked on the set. And for some reason, I don't recall the exact reason why, but Chad Johnson, as he was known at the time, I believe, not yet known as Ocho Cinco, and Chad Johnson offered to send me a free pair of Debos. Okay? I've yet to receive them.
Just so people know, what are Debos?
Footwear.
Okay. Expensive footwear?
You're talking to the wrong guy. Okay. How do you not know what footwear is?
I mean, I don't know what Debos are.
TJ, how expensive are Debos?
I don't know if I've ever heard of Debos.
He hasn't sent them to me. Whatever the hell they are, he hasn't sent them to me yet. And I'm going to hold him to account. Honestly. Big time. So, also on this show is, I've never spoken to this guy, but man, am I a fan of his work. He has been in, talk about a filmography. Apocalypse Now, Urban Cowboy, Right Stuff, Hunt for Red October, Silence of the Lambs, Backdraft, Silverado, and the new film Greenland. The Right Stuff. Man who played Alan Shepard in The Right Stuff, Scott Glenn, is on The Rich Eisen Show later on today. That'll be great. Also, my higher register is dynamite.
Whoa.
I cannot absolutely talk about how off the charts dynamite explosive my higher register is.
Oh, jeez.
Yes, sir. So you guys hopefully will come correct.
I like mine as well. But
good.
Man, that's
No. I'm not just saying this for tease purposes.
Okay.
I'm not. Really is great. Think it's going to be great. And I think you guys are going to engage.
I love it.
That's the way I'm setting it up. Now, apparently, Don Bowie just got in my ear to say, when you throw to break, which I'm about to do because Brian Balding is going to join us, Brian Kelly has just uncorked some verbiage in advance of Clemson Notre Dame.
Great.
I cannot wait to hear about it and tell you about it when I return, along with my friends, in my splentacular plum sweater, next on The Rich Eisen Show.
Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. With Together Mode, you can bring everyone together in one space in the same virtual room. You can bring the power of true collaboration to your projects with Whiteboard, drawing, sharing, and building ideas in real time, all on the same page. And with large gallery view, you can see more of your team all at once with up to 49 people on screen, all at the same time. You can even raise your hand virtually so everyone can be seen and heard. When there are more ways to be together, there are more ways to be a team. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams.
Hey, everybody. The Rich Eisen Show store is open. Go to RichEisenStore.com. Be the first on your block with one of these babies. T-shirts, both long and, of course, short sleeve and white or heather gray. We've got hats. Hats, people. And, of course, start your day with a cup of Joe and a Rich Eisen Show coffee mug. Go to RichEisenStore.com and shop your head off right now. Okay, RichEisenStore.com. Go there right now. Brian Baldinger is going to be joining us. His breakdowns on Twitter at BaldyNFL are must-see. And it's not just me saying that as a colleague. It's the players in the NFL. Richard Sherman saying, can't wait to see it, or backing up. Like, this is exactly the stuff that we see. This is what we talk about. It's so inside X's and O's, and it's also explained in a very folksy way that only Brian Baldinger can do. And I look forward to chatting with him when the radio audience returns in mere seconds here on The Rich Eisen Show. We're back here on the Mightier 1090, where you can, again, hear, and I'll say this on Peacock as well as Sirius XM, for The Rich Eisen Show radio affiliate here in Southern California, you can hear Clemson Notre Dame at 4 Eastern time on the Mightier 1090 here in Southern California. That game's going to go down. Brian Kelly has said, before we get to Brian Baldinger here, Brian Kelly said today on a Zoom in advance of this game that if Notre Dame is in the college football playoffs, and they are chosen to go to a site that does not allow families to attend the game, he will not have Notre Dame take the field in that game. Reason why this is all brought up, this is a very thorny issue, certainly here in Southern California as well, is the Rose Bowl is in fact one of the sites for one of the college football semifinal playoff games. As you know, as the 49ers are showing the free world, the state of California and certainly the county in Santa Clara, California, has very strict COVID rules that other states, like say the state of Florida, do not have in place. It would be any game that's played in the Rose Bowl currently, unless the county, and we are here in Los Angeles County, we are here next door to Pasadena. It's bad here, folks. It's bad everywhere. I get it. But it's particularly bad here. It's getting worse every day here in Southern California, the it being COVID-19. And so I don't believe anything is going to be lifted in terms of restrictions as to who can be sitting in the stands in the Rose Bowl. And there's 100,000 seats. You can absolutely be socially distant enough and put every family together in a pod and be socially distant, sitting on benches, staring at the beautiful San Gabriel Mountains, if that comes the case. So that is what's happening right now. Brian Kelly, quote, I'm not sure we'll play in the playoffs if the parents can't be there. Why would we play if you can't have families at the game? If you can't have families at bowl games, why would you go to a game where your families can't be part of it? What's the sense of playing a game in an area of the country where nobody can be a part of it? Somebody's got to wake up in that room, meaning the College Football Playoff Committee, and figure this out, or you might as well call this the professional league. I'm so sick and tired of this playoff committee talking about having sites where you can't have parents at and their families. It's ridiculous. And it's also a very sensitive issue for the Rose Bowl, which, as you know, I'm very partial to. Very sensitive issue to the Rose Bowl because the Rose Bowl is, in my mind, the most picturesque, historic college football site in America. In America. And I know that there's a lot of people who want to talk about the Army-Navy game, and that's understandable. Here in Southern California, there is no place. It's a cathedral. It is a cathedral for college sports, yeah. College football.
Yes.
And the Rose Bowl needs to have this game. Got to have it. There's a beautiful stadium that's just up the road here that's going to be home to a lot of, like, you know, a lot of major events. Rose Bowl, has to stay relevant. And so, once again, COVID putting the pressure on so many different pressure points in our world. And this is a point of contention. Brian Kelly wants to, there's a lot of people talking about moving the Rose Bowl itself somewhere else. I don't know how that possible that would be. There's sponsorship issues. There's all sorts of issues. We'll hit on this subject with Chris Fowler coming up later on the Rich Eisen Show. Now then, let's turn to our friend whose Twitter breakdowns are just phenomenal. The Baldy breakdowns just need to be seen. Brian Baldinger back here on the Rich Eisen Show. How have you been, Baldy?
Rich, I'm good. I'm good. I hope that you and the wife and the kids are all, good and protected and all that kind of stuff.
We're hanging in there.
I'll say this, Rich. In this COVID world that we all have to guard ourselves against, living in a film room is a naturally safe, distant place.
Nice.
People don't come in there, Rich. It's me and 32 NFL teams and a bunch of players, and I just kind of live in my little fantasy. I feel fortunate I can do all of that.
So, and Brian, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, just your manner of speaking and your folksy way of breaking it down in an entertaining but also informative way really makes it particularly special, and I can't call enough attention to it. And Richard Sherman has tweeted about it. You've seen other players tweeting about it. Who is the tape hero? Who has been the I know it's going to be phenomenal, but consistently better than you even knew it would be. Who's been that guy all year long for 2020 for you, Brian?
Well, I mean, Rich, as a long-suffering Jet fan that you are,
yes,
you cannot turn a Jet tape on and not look at Highway 77 over there at left tackle.
Look at you.
And Mekhi Becton. He literally, I mean, I joke around it. You call it folks. Yeah, I mean, I try to have fun, but I can't imagine Mekhi Becton putting up holiday ornaments or decorations. I mean, if he touched one of my Christmas bulbs that are on my tree right now, he would smash. I mean, everything he hits gets smashed. I have to watch Mekhi Becton, Rich.
No kidding. So
the Jets, obviously.
No, are you not just trying to tailor it to an audience here, Brian? I mean, like, that's really the guy that that's been so consistently dominant on tape this year has been the left tackle of an 0-13 team, but he's that good.
Well, I mean, you know, it's easy to go to Aaron Rodgers and go, how does he get this ball to Devontae Adams without ever looking at him? And it's an audible. It's just check. But there's no communication. He doesn't even look at him. And the ball comes out in the first play last week, and he hits Devontae Adams for 5 yards. Or Patrick Mahomes, there's just no answer to anything that he does. Everybody has tried. I mean, Brian Flores tried his best. He intercepted 3 passes last week, and you could put a blindfold on Patrick Mahomes. He's going to find Travis Kelce in the middle of the field. I mean, the beautiful thing about our league and the NFL, Rich, is there is never enough great athleticism or skill. It never runs out, ever. And so you could go around, and I pointed out the Jets because they're the worst team in the league, record-wise. Right. But there's a player on that team that you would want to watch and you would pay to watch.
Brian Baldinger here on the Rich Eisen Show. Last night, Justin Herbert was exactly that. What are you seeing out of this kid that adds to the or backs up the superlatives that people keep throwing out that the Chargers have a keeper here in Justin Herbert?
Well, you remember Robert Redford in The Natural. He was Roy Hobbs. To me, Justin Herbert is Roy Hobbs. Like, nobody could have predicted coming out of Oregon and what they called a system offense that he could make everything look so easy and natural, including the 53-yard strike in overtime to Jalen Guyton, set up the quarterback sneak to win the game. I mean, I was there at SoFi Stadium, Rich, in week 2,
yep,
when Tyrod Taylor, bless his heart, goes into the locker room before the kickoff, and nobody knows what's going on. And the next thing you know, he's thrown in there against the Kansas City Chiefs, and he takes the ball right down the field and scores against the Chiefs. And he knew 5 minutes before the kick that he was going to start. And he's been the natural all year long. And everything from his ability to just throw a football like it's the easiest thing in the world to getting out of harm's way, to putting the ball in the right location, to eluding the rush against some of the great athletes that chase him. I mean, he's been like that all season.
So your defensive rookie of the year would be who then? If this is he your offensive rookie of the year, or Justin Jefferson does actually give him a run for his money, and then we can transition
Justin
to the defense.
Adams is, Diggs is, but he's doing it in a 21-year-old body. Now, he has 2 plans, Rich, on every given play. A plan in the open, and then a plan after the catch. Nobody's in that rookie class of 35 receivers that were drafted plays the game like Justin Jefferson. He's probably already the best offensive player on that team, and it's a bright future. But I would say defensively right now, I think the Washington football team are playing lights-out defense, and you could put Chase Young in a tuxedo, and he would look James Bond smooth, and then he would but as smooth as he is, he's just as violent. It looks so easy. There's just his movement is just rare. That's all.
Brian Baldinger here on the Rich Eisen Show. Who do you think is the best team in the NFC? You know, you've got Drew Brees coming back for the Saints against the Chiefs, so that's going to happen. You've got Rodgers. You just mentioned how terrific he has looked on film, and we've seen it in real life motion as well. You've got the Rams that have that grown ass man 99 right in the middle of a defense that has number 20 on the back end. You've got the Seahawks looking the way that they look in the last month. You've got also the Bucks at some point, we assume, are going to have a run in them. Who do you think is the best team in the NFC? And you can even throw the Washington football team in this mix the way that they've been playing the last month.
Washington football team might be the best defense in the NFL before the season's out. They just physically just annihilate teams. But it'd be hard to go against Green Bay right now, because I think what Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers have now figured out, if they have a plan for whatever you do at them, it doesn't matter what your defense is or who's the stars on the other side, there's a plan. And I don't know that anybody can execute the plan better than Aaron Rodgers right now. So I mean, they're going to put up a lot of points. We know defensively, Rich, that, you know, teams can, you know, they can run the ball down their throats at times the way the 49ers did last year, the way the Bucs did this year. So there's a weakness there that probably won't go away. But they can put a 35 or 40 spot up on just about anybody right now, the way Aaron Rodgers is playing. The ball doesn't bounce, for crying out loud. It doesn't matter where he throws it. They're in sync, Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, and they're going to be tough to beat.
And so then the AFC team that has the best opportunity to prevent the what we're assuming is the inevitable of the Chiefs returning to the Super Bowl, which team is that for you, Brian? What do you got for me there?
Well, I think teams that can really run the ball well, like Cleveland, could be a tough matchup for Kansas City. Because if you can, you know, look, the old you know, if you can play keep away from Patrick Mahomes and not allow them to have the ball very often or limit the possessions to 6 or 7 in a game, and if you could take one away and force a field goal, whatever, I mean, you might be able to keep the score down. I mean, Cleveland, the way they can run it, could be a problem for them. Buffalo is capable of getting in a shootout with just about anybody, the way that quarterback is playing, the way Stephon Diggs is playing, where they could put up a lot of points. And defensively, they do a lot. They're very creative what they do defensively. They're very good at certain positions. So I would say Buffalo and Cleveland could be two possible roadblocks to the Chiefs returning to the Super Bowl.
And I guess to wrap it up, you want to talk, because you mentioned an AFC East player that's fun to watch. How much fun is Josh Allen? How much fun is it watching him, Brian?
Well, part of the fun is, I mean, honestly, nothing ruffles him at all, ever.
Right.
And part of the fun is nobody could have predicted this coming out of Wyoming. Nobody. That he could be a 70% completion quarterback.
Amazing.
That all the crazy, wacky plays that he tried to make as a rookie would just disappear. You know, and when he gets into a rhythm, like he did a couple of Monday nights ago, I mean, there's nothing that can really stop him except just throwing the ball away to avoid a rush. But and his arm is a cannon. I mean, 80 yards is not out of the question for him to put the ball in the air. I've seen it. So he is exactly what every team is looking for, to find the franchise quarterback and then build around him the way Brandon Bean and, you know, Sean McDermott have done, and do it the right way. I mean, they're the poster child for how to build a franchise right now.
And then, you know, a phenomenal Week 15 game. It's the Lincoln Riley Bowl with Kyler Murray hosting the quarterback that succeeded him in Oklahoma. It's Jalen Hurts' first road start. What did you see on film about how Jalen has maybe corrected some flaws, covered flaws in this offense that unfortunately Wentz was only accentuating? What did you see out of Hurts that makes you think this could be something possible for the Eagles to keep repeating?
Well, he has uncanny poise, Rich. The touchdown throw to Alshon Jeffrey, I mean, he got hit right in the kisser by Quan Alexander. They flagged him for it. The ball went exactly where he wanted it to go. So he made a big-time throw to get him up 7-0. They spied him all game long with a variety of players. It didn't do any good. He's one of those guys that I don't know how fast he is, but he's as fast as he needs to be.
Nice.
And so just the way Kyler is. So that's that. And then, you know, he's a great runner. He was coming out of Channelview High School outside of Houston, and he was at Alabama for his first two seasons there. And when he had to at Oklahoma, he was. He's a good runner. He has a good feel for where the lanes are. You know, he knows how to protect himself. Any kid out of Texas knows how to slide. I mean, you learn how to slide when you're 4 in Texas. He knows how to slide, protect himself. And then, you know, it wasn't a very complicated game plan, but he executed it. And so he put the ball where Miles Sanders and Jalen Reagor could do something with it after the catch. And for the first time all year, you know, in Philadelphia Eagle quarterback wasn't sacked in a game. And that's a testament to him getting the ball out of his hands and not holding it and not, you know, coming unglued as soon as somebody showed up in his face. And he was really good at it.
And you're great at breaking it down, man. Brian, I really do enjoy watching what you do. And it's bite-sized, 2.5 minutes, minute and a half year, minute 45. Congrats on getting the, you know, more every year attention on that. And let's do this more often. Brian, happy New Year to you and yours.
I appreciate that, Rich. Thanks very much for having me. And
of course,
happy holidays to you and
thanks,
to all of yours as well, Rich. Appreciate
you. You take care of yourself, Brian Baldinger. At Baldy NFL, please follow him. It's really dynamite. You will not rue it. That's a good point. I mean, this is a great game. Eagles are right there. They need it. Cardinals, despite that month-long drought that had one burst of Hail Mary, are in the seventh spot. They're there.
They're the seventh seed.
They're there, right? Two kids from the state of Texas who wound up different paths to Oklahoma. Now there they are as starting quarterbacks in the NFL and a must-have. And a must-have week 15 late window game. Let's go.
Am I crazy?
I'm upset about this
one. Am I crazy for liking the Eagles in this game?
You're not. You are not, sir. I told you. Let's just repeat this one more time. Let's do this one more time because it's fun. Here we go. Philadelphia. Currently, right now, in the NFC East, looking up at the Giants and the Washington football team. If they win out, that's this week in Arizona, next week against Dallas. They have the Washington football team. They play them, okay? They play them. If the Washington football team loses to Seattle, okay, loses to Seattle, wins against Carolina, they would have to win that game against Philadelphia to keep the Eagles at bay if the Giants don't throw their hand in the their hat in the ring.
Well, the Giants have to win out, essentially.
If that loss the Giants had, just as big as it was for Arizona?
Yeah. Last week was a huge game for the Giants.
Oh, my word.
Giants have to finish 8-8.
But again the Eagles are 4-8-1. If they can go into this game, the final game of the year, 6-8-1, right? And Washington is 7-8. Okay. They win the game. They're 7-8-1, and Washington finishes 7-9. See ya.
They're in.
Washington loses this week. They're 6-8. They win the following week. They're 7-8. The Eagles win the next 2 weeks. They're 6-8-1. 7-8-1, better than 7-9.
That tie just.
And let's just say the Giants don't. The Giants are also 7-8. The Giants might have to win out. Philadelphia has a shot here.
Still alive.
My God, are they still alive?
All three of them really have a shot.
Well, they finished up strong when nobody saw them coming, and they won the division last year, too.
Still alive.
That's right. The Don.
I mean, they've all taken shots.
Is the Don may be slipping, but his soul is not resting yet.
Nope.
You know? And then Dallas, I guess, TJ, I don't want to give you too much, but you guys went out. You're 7-9 too, and San Francisco. That Philadelphia Dallas game may be like rubbernecking, right? On the just where you're passing by and you're slowing down to see what's going on the side of the road here. But that's a big one in Week 16, gents.
Very big. Rubbernecking.
That's a big one, TJ Jefferson.
I once was driving on the 405 and I saw an 18-wheeler on fire, like engulfed in flames.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah, that's kind of what.
That may be week 16, Philadelphia, Dallas.
I had to slow down and pull out my phone and go, what is that?
The whole thing.
You know. So. Of course, if all four teams lose, it's still the same thing entering week 16. By the way, still the same thing works where, you know, Philadelphia is still 1.5 behind with 2 to go. Oh, my gosh. Let's take a break. When we come back, the latest example of how Sam Darnold is broken. He's broken as a football player, but he's not as a human. Not as a human. He's still a sweetheart. That's coming up next.
Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in one space with a new virtual room. Collaborate live. Drawing, sharing, and building ideas with everyone on the same page. And make sure more of your team is seen and heard with up to 49 people on screen at once. Learn more about all the newest Teams features at Microsoft.com/Teams.
This is a large football game, not just because of the way that I just broke down the NFC East standings, but the Browns They need it. And the Browns got a huge help from the Chargers last night because the Raiders had a head-to-head tiebreak with the Browns based on their win in Cleveland earlier this year. And now the Browns are 2.5 clear of the Vegas Raiders going into Sunday night with 3 to play on their docket. So that was a big win for the Browns. Now they need to come up with a big win of their own on Sunday Night Football on NBC. Yeah, I mean, the Browns want no part, by the way, of being tied with any of the teams that had a head-to-head tiebreak on them. And the Raiders had one, right? The Colts beat the Browns too, correct, Christopher? Didn't that happen earlier this year?
Yeah, I believe so.
You look that one up? Because this is we're here on the Mightier 1090 and Sirius XM Channel 211.
No, the Browns beat the Colts.
The Browns beat the Colts. Okay, so the Browns have a tiebreak on the Colts. The Colts want no part of being in a head-to-head tiebreak with the Browns.
Right.
Who wanted no part of being in a head-to-head tiebreak with the Raiders. The Browns also want no part of being in any tie, regardless of the number of teams, with the Ravens. Because any time when the NFL sees multiple teams, 3 or 4 teams tied at the same record, usually it's 3. 4 is very rare. What they do is they break any ties in that mosh pit in division first. That's the first thing they do. They separate teams by division and then break that tie and then create a head-to-head with who's ever left. Cleveland wants no piece of Baltimore winning out. And Cleveland being somehow in some way, shape, or form with 11 wins. They want no piece of that. They got to win, man. Everybody's got to win here. Obviously, that's the easiest. In case you're sitting here wondering, how does my team make the playoffs? Easiest path is for your team to win. Yeah. And then we'll figure it out down the road. And if your team has a partridge in a pear tree type chance, a dumb and dumber type chance of clinching a playoff spot this week, like, say, Tennessee does, Tennessee has to win and then a whole bunch of other things happen. Just know that that win, even if it doesn't mean a playoff spot this week, it makes it much easier for the playoff scenario to just be win and you're in the following week. Just know that.
Yeah, just keep winning.
And then, you know, just keep winning. That's what you got to do.
Super easy.
Or in the case of the Jets, just keep losing. Just got to keep losing because you're so close.
Even when you lose, you win.
Even when you lose, you win. That is correct. Very rare do we quote LeVar Ball around here. But that is the case for the New York Jets.
Even when you lose, I win.
I still don't know what that
means. Gotta keep losing, man. Gotta keep losing. Because you've come this far. You've come this far. And I must admit, every time I say it, a piece of me dies, not just as a 51-year-old Jet fan that I'm saying this stuff, but because I know what a rock-solid, dynamite, terrific, face of a franchise human being Sam Darnold is. I know it. Kid, not on social media, not worrying about all this other garbage that's going on in the world. Not that somebody's on social media, cares about that stuff. But young kid, when you're a young kid and you're just focusing on your craft, first thing he did when he signed with the Jets was show up in a children's hospital. Behind the scenes. Just really, just aces. He has been failed. He has been broken. That has happened. And I tell Trevor Lawrence, if this happens, pay that no mind that this kid's been broken because they're going to bring in a whole new team that would ordinarily not want to come to the Jets and work for the Johnson family if it weren't for you, Trevor Lawrence. So just know that. Sam Darnold, this just shows you how, A, he's still just the same wonderful human, and B, he is broken. This is what he had to say in advance of the Jets taking on the Rams and Aaron Donald this week.
Yeah, Aaron Donald's a good player. He definitely pops out on tape, especially it seems like whenever a play needs to be made, he's always there making it. So, it'll be fun playing against him.
Sweet man. Sweet kid. It'll be fun playing against him. Do you know how many Rams fans saw that and texted me yesterday?
It'll be fun.
He knows not of what he speaks. That's just like one bright, blinking "Bring on Alabama" sign.
Right. All these small
schools.
But
he's competing. God bless him. He's competing. he's competing.
Still playing.
So that hasn't been broken in him. And his just human side has not been broken in him. So at least that hasn't broken him, which is great news for anybody that's going to come knocking on the Jets door hoping for him.
You know what might break him, though?
Aaron Donald.
I mean, might is a very strong
come word. On, man. Look at that. Brockman.
Rocked up.
It's not fair. Looking forward to playing.
I look like that.
He should have been. I'm looking forward to the challenge, not looking forward to playing him.
Yeah.
Because, you know, certain players are different human. They're different. They. If I'm Aaron Donald, I look at that as a challenge. Oh, you're looking forward to playing me, huh?
Oh, great.
Even though that's just a nice thing to say and just throwing it, oh, you're looking forward. That's like DK Metcalf saying, oh, you're comparing me to somebody, huh? I'm me. Oh, you're looking forward to playing me, huh? I'll see you out there. You can say, no, I'm looking forward to the challenge. You know, whatever. I shouldn't even go anywhere. I'm just fearful of Sam Darnold and for him. and a little bit of him because he can ball out and ruin this whole thing as he's going to try. As rightfully he should. He should. It's just a huge conundrum, you know? A huge conundrum. And you know what? And I've posed this question about at the same time of Bears fans. You know, 6-7 versus 6-7. Are you looking at last week? Like, that's great. Let's go. Let's keep rolling with Trubisky and Nagy. Or you're like, oh, God, please no more of that because we need to turn the page. Look who's calling from in the back. Is our call screener Adam back here on the show? And I love this, certainly at the end of hours, because the last time he did this, he let me know that you guys all had Lou Malnati's pizza without inviting me. So,
Adam, think before you speak.
I was just going to say,
think before you speak.
Lou Malnati's pizza rat, but okay. I think I've made it up with some Frango mints that I've given everybody today.
From Chicago, I've got them right here. Thank you for that. So as you know, the clock very well. We've got about 2 minutes to go. You're the resident Bears fan. Adam, do you want the Bears to keep playing like this and see if this is actually the real thing with Trubisky and Nagy and let's go or what? What are you thinking?
Rich, I want to have my deep dish pizza and eat it too.
Very good, Adam.
I want the Bears to make the playoffs. Do I think it's going to happen? Absolutely not. No way. I don't think the Bears are going to beat the Vikings. I think they'll beat the Jaguars. I don't think they'll beat the Packers. So I think they're going to be 7-9.
This team
needs to be blown up. Ted Phillips needs to go. Ryan Pace needs to go. Trubisky needs to go. Nagy gets one more year because he sent us a couple of Chicago Bears visors 2 years ago, which I have, so I appreciate that.
But Adam, have you learned nothing sitting back there and answering calls and listening to me? Have you learned nothing that this is a zero-sum game, that you cannot have your deep dish pizza and eat it too, that you cannot trust ownership to not see past the false flag finish of a Chicago Bears season, that this job, if you do need a house cleaning, needs to be finished on the field with some losses, as to use the phrase that we're using here, difficult to swallow as it may be? Adam, have you learned nothing from me?
Rich, I listen to the show every day. I want...
Thank you for that.
We need to blow it up. Let's not make the playoffs this year.
There we go. Hope. Yes.
You're right.
Come to the dark side, Adam.
Blow it up.
Come
blow it up.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Every year.
Thank you very much. All right, Adam. Thanks much. And, we'll see you in a second when I come back.
Exactly.
When I come back, because the Keurig machine's right next to Adam. I'll see you in a second. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean
it. It was great hanging out.
But that's fandom right there. It pains him to say this. He doesn't want it.
Yeah,
he'd like
not.
To have the Bears beat the Vikings, have the Bears beat the Packers in week 17, maybe stick the Packers with the worst seed, Bears make it, and then, you know, at least they make the playoffs, and then they're one and done, and they'll clean house anyway. But you can't trust ownership to see through that. They might be like, you know, when you're in a meeting with Matt Nagy, he's a, you know, couldn't be a nicer guy, right?
Couldn't be an answer.
And you're in a meeting with the general manager saying, see, the plan's working. See? And you got, you know, owners, friends call up and go, that was so much fun. The family, my family watched together. Maybe you guys have something. They go hire a register on the owner, and the owner believes it. Nuh-uh.
No.
If you want a house cleaning, you as a fan must commit to sitting in your own stink. Because eventually, it all comes up roses. At least that's the way I'm hoping for the Jets. Chris Fowler when we come back. Ocho Cinco will be here as well. Hour number two coming up.
Yeah, Rich, going back to Sam Darnold for a second. He says he's excited to play against him. The single game sack record is 7 by Derek
Thomas. The late Derek Thomas.
Against Dave Craig back in 1990.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it might be, we might be on single game sack record watch.
He's such a good kid, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he is going to make somebody else a great franchise face. He really, really will.
This week. Going to be Sam Darnold's ghost.
Seeing nines.
That's like a breakup line right there.
He is going to be somebody's great, great quarterback. And I will root for him.
Good kid.
You're going to make someone a great husband.
It's terrible. I feel like I'm breaking up with somebody. It's not you. It's me. I invented it's not you. It's Trevor. I invented.
And the Jets are me.
I invented that. Don't forget, after the week one loss, we said that.
We've been on
it. It's not a lie. If you believe it.
Told Todd McShay at the time.
And he laughed.
He laughed, and rightfully so. It's just after 1 week. What are we talking about? Except I know. I see. Oh, yeah. I feel. I have a gut. Don't forget, when everybody's on it, this guy might be coming for Darnold.
I mean,
but I invented it's not you, it's Trevor. I invented it. Except no other.
Now there are more ways to be a team with Microsoft Teams. Bring everyone together in a new virtual room, collaborate live, building ideas on the same page, and see more of your team on screen at once. Learn more at Microsoft.com/Teams.